When is a budget cut a spending increase?
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Congress has been talking a lot lately about chopping into the budget. The Senate is supposed to vote today on a reconciliation bill. Among other things, it would slice chunks out of Medicaid, farm subsidies, and student financial help. But senators are throwing new things right back into the bill. So what's the point? Here's Marketplace's Hillary Wickay.
The Senate budget reconciliation bill has been advertised as a budget-cutting bill. The measure is supposed to save $39 billion over the next 5 years. But some recent amendments don't cut. They actually tack on more spending for things like bird flu preparations and hurricane relief. Budget analyst Stan Collender says there's been a lot of talk about these budget-cutting efforts, but it seems to be much ado about nothing.
The reconciliation bill is part of a larger effort that will actually also include a tax cut. And when you combine the two bills plus the additional spending that the Senate's throwing in, you actually end up with a net increase in the deficit, not a decrease.
The red ink last fiscal year totaled $319 billion. In Washington, I'm Hillary Wickay for Marketplace.
How about the government as investor? The bankrupt airlines and the automakers are turning their pension plans over to Uncle Sam. Well, the Wall Street Journal says that's creating an unusual side effect. The government's becoming a big shareholder in those companies. The courts just gave the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation 7% of U.S. Airways. It'll likely get a much bigger chunk of United. Taxpayers could benefit if those stocks go up, but some say it's a very tricky place for the government to be. A few years back, some Wall Street banks settled charges of misleading investors. They were hyping stocks that analysts knew weren't up to snuff. Now investors are lining up for their share of the restitution. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
More than $440 million have been set aside for investors who lost money in the research scandal. By the end of last month, nearly 34,000 claims had poured in, according to a new report. Almost half of those eligible to file a claim did so. Duke University law professor Francis McGovern is in charge of distributing the fund. He says response rates in these types of settlements are typically much lower.
This was a very high-profile case, a very large sum of money, and extraordinary efforts were taken to make sure that the money went to the actual recipients.
He won't speculate how much money the average investor will get until all the claims are processed. The downside of a big response rate is the potential for smaller individual payments. But McGovern says he'll send no checks smaller than $100. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Just wanted to tell you that NBC's starting up a new cable channel. It's called Sleuth. And crime's the topic, doll. You'll get to see classic 80s shows like Miami Vice and Knight Rider, plus Universal's chipping in movies including Scarface. Now, I've had enough of this crime business. Let's do the numbers. Investors may be getting ready for a year-end rally. The Dow climbed about 66 points to 10,472. The S&P 500 rose 12 to 1214. And the NASDAQ was up about 30 points to finish the day at 2144. You're listening to Marketplace. Time for our fall fashion update. I don't mean clothing, investing. Hedge funds and junk bonds are so last year. Here's fashion reporter Stacey Vanek Smith.
In recent months, money going into hedge funds has been cut roughly in half, and junk bond sales have fallen by a third in the last year. Why the drop in popularity for these high-risk, high-return investments?
Junk bonds are the wrong place to be if the economy runs into a problem. Hedge funds are not the place to be if the financial markets run into trouble.
Economist Hugh Johnson says investors are worried about energy prices and interest rates.
The Federal Reserve could be seduced by higher inflation into raising interest rates too high, and if they make a mistake, we could have a turn down in the economy. That's the message I'm getting from investors.
Johnson says investors are increasingly putting money into low-risk stocks and bonds. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Which is produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Fannie Mae, working with our partners to increase homeownership and affordable rental housing opportunities for more Americans. Fannie Mae, FannieMae.com. And by the Medtronic Foundation, partnering with national patient associations to educate and support patients and their families. The Medtronic Foundation, on the web at Medtronic.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. Alan Greenspan's legacy is assured as one of the most revered Federal Reserve chairmen. But as his 18-year tenure winds down, there is one area where he's faced a lot of criticism: his policy about market bubbles, like the dot-com craze of the late 90s. I asked personal finance expert Chris Farrell for his thoughts.
Greenspan gave a famous speech. This is the famous moment, 1996. And he talked about irrational exuberance in the stock market. And then he did nothing for the next 4 years. And you had the whole dot-com phenomenon and internet stocks going higher and higher and higher. And commentators were saying the Fed needs to do something about this. And Greenspan said, no, we don't need to do something about it. The bubble burst and the economy weakened and the stock market went down. And when the bubble bursts, it typically takes the economy with it.
Well, now the bubble that everybody's worried about is the housing bubble, the real estate market. What's going to be the fallout with that one?
First of all, we still don't know if it's a bubble. It's still one of the big debates out there. You want to start a debate among economists? Talk about the housing market. Is it a bubble? Is it an overpriced market? When housing prices peak, which it looks like that they have, are housing prices just going to stagnate, or are we just going to get a collapse in prices? I mean, it's a fierce debate. But should Greenspan puncture this bubble? I don't know. I mean, people have been pouring money into it. People aren't stupid. There have been a lot of fundamentals that have been backing it. So I think this is a classic example of why you don't interfere. And by the way, if it is a bubble that bursts, the Federal Reserve has a lot of tools that it can use to help stabilize the economy.
There are a lot of economists who completely disagree with Greenspan. Why is this such a contentious issue?
You know, bubbles are the great stories in financial history. The tulip bubble, tulip mania is one of the great stories. And, you know, in Holland, where tulip bulbs went up higher and higher and higher, and then the bubble burst and took the economy with it. The more positive side, and this is the part that I think most economists underestimate, and particularly the people who criticize Greenspan, is that it's during bubbles and when there's a lot of excitement, is also when there's a lot of technological innovation. And during that whole dot-com mania, what happened is we built the internet economy faster than anyone thought was possible. So the positive case for what Greenspan did is that he allowed for innovation. He allowed for enthusiasm. And we are a much better society today because of that. But there's a camp out there that thinks bubbles are really, really bad, that in a global economy, bubbles are getting bigger and bigger, and when they burst, they have the danger of really taking the economy with it, not just into a recession, but into potentially a depression. That's the fear. It's not irrational. I just think it's misplaced.
Chris Farrell's economics editor for our weekend program, Marketplace Money. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.